Welcome to Real Life Mentoring, where we explore real life issues to help you make an authentic difference in the world.
Well, hi, it's Chris and Christina with Real Life Mentoring Podcast. Just as a reminder, we train and equip adults to become holistic, effective mentors in the church and business, impacting individuals, families, and communities into the next generation. That's why we have a guest today. And Chris, I'm going to let you set up who he is.
This is John Crane, Senator John Crane. So John, you were a senator in Indiana for how many years and what time frame?
For 8 years. I first got elected in 2016, and then I voluntarily term limited myself and chose not to run for re-election in 2024. So I served two full terms in the Indiana legislature and the Senate.
Okay. Well, I was on a webinar about a month ago that you were leading, and you were talking mm-hmm. about aspects of leadership, and some things you said really resonated with me, but your character also came through in how you spoke. And that's what intrigued me to want to reach out to you and have you on our podcast. So we have some questions that we want to ask you today, but then what you just said a moment ago, that you chose to end your own political career that way, I'd be interested in finding out how you came to that decision, because people are always making decisions, important decisions that impact a lot of people. And how did you come to do that? So that's something I'd love to ask you.
That's the big question that everybody asks. Why did you do that? It is, first of all, such a pleasure to be able to join you both on the podcast today. And I look forward to our conversation about leadership. That's a real passion of mine, and actually played a direct role in my ultimate decision. Briefly, there's an idea that politics is downstream from culture. And I tend to agree with that it tends to be more of a reflection of culture. As much as we talk about being political leaders, you think about the politician who sticks his finger up in the wind to kind of judge which way the wind's going. Our human nature being what it is, many political leaders are actually political followers, because you're trying to gauge what your constituency is looking for. And so I think politics is more of a reflection. I think it is downstream from culture, but it begs the question, then what is upstream? And from my vantage point, what is upstream is the war of worldviews, or the battle for what I call thought leadership supremacy. Like, the leaders upstream are the ones that are going to have significant influence downstream. And I'm privileged, in addition to other leadership roles that I have, to serve on the National Board of Directors for the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. And so we have these conversations all the time, because it's hugely impactful in terms of worldview implications downstream. And that's where the church sits. Whether she realizes it or not, the church is right in the middle of that entire tension. And so for me, I felt called to serve in the Senate. Absolutely. If we had more time, I'd go into that. But essentially, God called me into this. I come from a very political family, actually, on my dad's side, and have a couple of uncles that served in the United States Congress. I have one who ran for president in 1980. And so people assumed this was what I was going to do, and I didn't necessarily assume that. But felt called to do it for a season. And when I came up for re-election in 2020, we were praying and asking God, do you want us to continue, or have you released me from this tour of duty? Did not feel released at that point. So we ran for re-election, then began to feel a different kind of stirring. My real passion is leadership development. And so as we moved closer to 2020, I went through that same process, and at this point felt a release to continue the work we've been doing upstream. It's not that being in politics is not important. It's really important. We need good leaders. We need biblically grounded leaders in that cultural space. But the question became, is that the best use of my best giftedness, the things that I'm passionate about and best at? And the more I reflected on that, the more I realized that the job responsibilities of being a senator became so all-consuming that all of my worldview efforts, all of our leadership development efforts, which we've been doing for 25 years, had turned into a side hustle. Mm-hmm. And so we were still doing that, but to me it was like, I want to be where I can absolutely max out. So I announced publicly that I wasn't running for re-election, that I was term limiting myself. I shocked a lot of people because it came out of the blue for them, even though we'd been processing it. And then, of course, people say, why? And it gives me the chance to give this answer. And the more I unpack it, and if people know me, they go, oh, that makes sense. You know, good for you. You know, some of them say congratulations because they know how hard it is in the political space. But really, that's what was the frame of mind that went into that decision. I don't regret it. I regret leaving some of my colleagues. You know, you kind of lock arms with some really good people. The process is extremely difficult, but so important. But I absolutely feel like God's called me into this next season of impact with our leadership efforts.
I think that that's a great quality of leadership, of knowing what your lane is, right? And it could change. Yeah. God could go, no, I want you here, but knowing this doesn't fit, so this has to go, and I'm going to run in this lane. Talk a little bit about leadership as a legacy, as you did in the webinar. Can you speak into that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. That was another part of this whole thing, not just conceptually, but in terms of some of the circumstances that were happening in my life at the time. I had already begun to sense the stirring. And if you know anything about politics, if you're going to be responsible in making those decisions, you have to set a pretty long runway. Because what it required then was, I'm now moving from a safe seat that I've served in to creating some upheaval, which is going to require a primary election. Okay. Otherwise, the primary would be a non-issue and everybody'd be focused on the general. Well, the primary in Indiana is in May. And so I knew that I needed to make my decision with at least a year in advance so that whoever was thinking about running now has time to actually put a campaign together. So in late 2022, we began to really make that decision internally. I began to have some key conversations. But in January of 2023, my father passed away at age 86. In fact, it was his 86th birthday, and he was lived a long, good life that was focused on the Lord and trying to leverage his influence. And so we began to think about legacy. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that happened in March of 2023 is I turned 50. And so all of a sudden, you're beginning to realize that most of your life is in the rear view. And you begin to think about, okay, how many years do I have left? And Lord willing, if God gives me good health, you know, I might have 20 good solid years. Maybe I'll live another 30 years, but 20 solid years. And it's like, all right, how can I leverage this in the best way? So to your point about legacy, one of the big things that I often challenge leaders in is, if you could attend your own funeral, what would you want people to say about you? Well, of course, we all want people to say all the positives, and that's typically what we hear. Even if the guy was a bum, you still try to figure out some positive things to say about him at his funeral. And so we want people to reflect on us positively. Well, it begs the question then, what are you doing today to become that kind of person, that kind of leader that will be described at your funeral? Because the reality is, as I tell leaders, we're all building a brand for good or for ill. Every single day, it's an accumulation of all the different decisions we've made, all the different interactions we've had, all the different attitudes that we've expressed. All these things have created this reputation that we have in the minds of others. And so every day, we're actually writing our eulogy, because there will come a point when we will be at the end of our life and people will be reflecting on that. So it's intended not to be morbid, but actually to create an increased sense of urgency that, you know, every day God's given us this gift of the hours that we have. How are we leveraging that?
That resonates with me. We each have a brand. How would you describe your brand currently?
Well, that's a great question.
Is that fair to ask you on the spur of the moment?
I don't know that anybody has ever asked me what I think my brand is. I'll tell you what I hope my brand is.
Okay.
And I try to be very intentional about that. Let me start by saying I am not perfect. I think I have a positive public brand.
We need to cancel this interview then. If you're not perfect, yeah,
right.
We can't talk
exactly.
to you.
Exactly. You only take perfect guests.
Yeah.
I didn't qualify. But I think I have a generally positive brand. Obviously, in politics, all the decisions you're required to make, there's going to be people that like you and people that don't. That's just the nature of the business. But in terms of me, John Crane, as a leader in our community and in our church and all these things, I think my brand is very sound. My hope is that people will see me as somebody who is very intentional, somebody who's trying to be on mission every day, somebody who is maybe has accomplished some things, but isn't allowing that to feed my ego. Because one of the other things that we talk about all the time is that titles are just tools, right? Titles are not necessarily our identity. And it's very easy in the political space, especially when you're a senator or you're some kind of high profile person, to assume that this now is who you are and everybody should bow accordingly. And I've seen that far too many times where we allow our humanness and our ego to get in the way of service. We give lip service to service, but in terms of how we act, we kind of walk around with this posture that is understandable because we're sinful humans, but it's a turnoff to people. Nobody likes that guy, right? And so my hope is that for all the good that I've done or the things that I've accomplished, people will see me as a friend. People will see me as a confidant. People will see me as somebody who's thoughtful in terms of how we think about the issues and how we interact. People will see me as somebody who's principled and tries to live according to my biblical worldview framework. And where needed, the people will see me as somebody who's courageous, willing to show up, willing to stand up, willing to speak up in those moments when it's required. And all of those things are kind of some of the principles that we try to share with others because we need a world that are those kinds of people. And so we've tried to model that with our kids and get farther into the community. I hope that that's what people think of me. I don't know. I've never actually sat down with them and said, hey, what would you say my brand is? But my hope is that it's that kind of brand.
Well, I would say your brand came across enough to me, how you described it, that I saw humility. And I'm not just saying that. I heard it and I felt it. And I thought, I want this guy on our podcast if he's willing to. So your brand came across to a total stranger.
Right? Because it's easy in politics to manufacture an image.
Sure.
Right. I could do like fake humility so that everybody thinks I'm humble, but in reality, I'm not. I don't want to, right? Because at the end of the day, our model is following the example of Christ and to do the best we can fallibly to try to model that for other people so that the brand of Christ and Christianity is positive, is inviting. We can win hearts and minds. And it starts with us, right? Leadership starts in the mirror and then goes from there.
I am interested. You said at 50, your dad passes away. You have this milestone birthday. For me, that started, we have a grandson. He's a little over a year old. And my thoughts are—
Congratulations.
Thank you. He's the squishiest blessing I've ever had. But my thoughts, and we have had more and more conversations about when he's 5, when he's 15, when he gets married, I want him to know these things. I started to journal with praying, specific prayers, so that when I'm gone, he looks back and has that marker, that intentionality. I've tried to serve the Lord and really be intentional, but it ramped up the minute that little boy came into our lives. Mm-hmm. So how would you tell leaders in their 30s to live for legacy?
And well, John, I'd like to add this as well.
Yeah.
We get involved in real life and it's difficult sometimes, many times. Sure. So I want to build a legacy. I want to be successful. I want to move forward and have a good family. And then these things hit me. This happens to people all the time and they get knocked down. And what Christina said, and how have you managed to stay above ground that you not just stay above ground, but you actually are able to help others become leaders?
Well, those are great questions. And I think they're interrelated, right? Recognizing that real life hits us. It's a dynamic life going on in real time. So we've got to make adjustments. But the adjustments, in my mind, are relative to the target. And that's the point that you're making, Christina, which is enhanced when we have our own kids and grandkids, when the next generation shows up and all of a sudden you begin to realize like, oh my goodness, I knew I had to be responsible before, but now I really do because I've got this little tiny human that if left to themselves would not survive. And I mean, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, on every level. So, wow, now I've got to figure out what to do. And I'm not a grandparent yet. My oldest son is married, so maybe we will be soon. But it happened when I was a parent. You got this little tiny baby that can't do anything for you except look cute and try not to smell too much with the dirty diapers, right? But it's like, you're sitting there looking at this child going, I would give my life for this little human. And that's a God-ordained thing. I tell people all the time, would I take a bullet for my family? Absolutely. Would I get up to go do the dishes during the fourth quarter of the Pacers OKC game? Right? No. Like, can we talk? Can we negotiate? I'll try to do it at halftime, but I'll try to, right? Like, it's that real-time stuff that gets difficult, but it starts with the goal. So one of the things that I share with people all the time, especially young people, but it applies to all of us, is it's never too soon to start taking your leadership seriously. I think that's part of the process of moving young people into adulthood is they begin to realize there is a much bigger, scarier world out there that my elders have been protecting me from. And at some point, we begin to pull that veneer off and step into the larger world. And kids today in particular, and college students in particular, with the internet and social media, have access to the world in ways that we didn't even imagine. And so there is just this constant bombardment of all these different things. And so that's why leadership is so critical. We need leaders who are taking that seriously and going, hey, I'm going to try to have positive influence in some way. And so we try to help people realize you don't have to go save the world. Just worry about trying to focus on your little corner of it and see who it is that you can bring goodwill to. But it starts with having that target, and then that target stays out there. And then we try to make those adjustments when real time things happen that might push us off course or get us distracted.
That's great. To me, it's a no-brainer, but talk about the mentoring connection and the role mentoring plays in leadership. Again, we're all about mentoring, one-on-one discipleship, if you're speaking church terms, but the importance of mentorship and leadership. Did you have a mentor growing up? It sounds like you came from this legacy of godly men in your life, but if you wouldn't mind speaking that.
Yeah, too. I had a number of mentors that God surrounded me with, teachers, family members, our youth pastor growing up, a lady named Marty Lambert, who just did a phenomenal job with this youth group over many years. When I came in seventh, in fact, she was my kindergarten teacher at the school I went to, and then became my youth pastor when I was in seventh grade through college, and just had tremendous impact in my life. And scout leaders, you know, who maybe aren't always coming from a Christian orientation, but are teaching you character and value and life skills and all these things. And so to me, I heard somebody say once that the truest sign of leadership is not how many people you can lead, but how many leaders you can create. And one of the things that I try to help people understand is we buy into this misconception of this demarcation between leaders and everybody else. Like there's leaders and then there's everybody else. And so you ask somebody something, what do you see yourself as a leader? No, I'm not really a leader because I don't have this title or this position. Our definition of leadership is intentional influence, which means that leadership is a choice. So I don't see the world as leaders and non-leaders. Are leaders born or made and all that? I simply see the world as leaders and potential leaders. Because every single one of us has the potential to make that choice to say, I want to have some influence. And what that means is exactly the point that you're raising, Christina, that we aren't necessarily, you know, all called to lead some massive movement, right? We all tend to measure our success based on numbers. What it means is faithfulness. Yeah. Do I have the ability to be able to have influence with the person across the table from me at a meal, in the cafeteria at school, if I'm having coffee with a colleague or a friend? if I'm serving in some way, can I have influence with that person? Is there just one thing I might be able to share with them that can help them out a little bit? That to me embodies mentoring, but it starts with this on-mission mindset, which is incorporated into this kind of on-mission mentoring. Yeah. Like every person I come in contact with, is there some way that I can help teach them, impact them, help them experience something that maybe they haven't experienced or think about something that they haven't thought about so that they walk away going, oh, wow. And if I do it with a servant's heart and a level of humility, hopefully, if there's opportunity, they'll want to circle back. Because in their head, they go, I like them. They might not consciously put all that together, but I want to spend more time with them. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an opportunity to continue to pour into people's lives. So to me, leadership and mentoring go hand in hand, but it has to start with, do I have that proactive on-mission mindset to say, I am going to make the choice to influence people regardless of who they are or what our particular environmental circumstances might be.
In our curriculum, we talk about the characteristics of a mentor. And the first thing we say is mentors are intentional. Like good relationships don't happen by accident. They're intentional. Right. And so that really speaks into what you're saying.
You called yourself intentional earlier. Do you realize you said that?
Yes, I try to live intentionally. I don't always do it. I have my targets, whether or not I hit them, that, you know, like some days are better than others. But I do firmly believe that every day we have is a gift from God, and it's one day closer to the end, right? Wow. And so you're going, man, okay, how do I maximize this? And it doesn't mean that I have to pull all-nighters and keep grinding. Part of that is I've got to have balance. I've got to have margin. I've got to have some fun along the way, right? God created a world that, as he says in Genesis 1, it was good. And so there's a lot of good things to experience, but it's trying to make sure that every day you're living on mission, you're being purposeful in the things that you do and the interactions you have, the people that you try to connect with and so forth.
John, you may have gotten this in perspective, or people may see you this way at times. You're in a position of leadership, you're a senator, and now you're leading is it a coaching business that you're leading?
Coaching is part of it. It's called JBC Leadership Strategies. And so we do a lot of leadership training, consulting. I do a lot of speaking, get on podcasts like this and do some things internationally, speaking at different conferences and things like that. So it's a combination of all of that.
The reason I ask that is this. People can make the assumption you've got it all figured out. You're good to go. All right. And this is with us as being mentors, and we train people to be mentors. That is what we do for a living. That's our career. And the assumption can be made, you've got it all figured out. And obviously we don't, but would you mind sharing for the audience, especially the men out there, because men are battled so in so many ways. I've got to support the family. I've got to lead here. I've got to do this. And if you've not had someone who've come alongside of you to do that, I didn't have that. And you're just trying to figure it out as you go along. So my question would be this. What's it like behind the scenes sometimes for you? Here you are a leader, and yet you're human. What's it like behind the scenes on a typical day?
Well, let me start by saying this. Leadership's a team sport, right? I mean, we all have learned some things, and hopefully we're trying to teach some things, and we're all kind of trying to figure some stuff out. We did a leadership summit here in Indianapolis over the weekend at Butler University, and brought in high school and college students. And afterward, one of the kids had a flat tire, and this other kid who's in college came out and was checking the tire on how to find the leak using dish soap. I wasn't aware of that. I was like, man, that's pretty clever, right? So you're always like trying to learn different things. This college kid that had worked in a detail shop or something. But to me, behind the scenes is continuing to take care of yourself first, right? Like if I want to lead other people well, I've got to learn to lead myself well. That means the disciplines. It's got to be spiritual disciplines. Am I getting grounded in the Word of God and a time of prayer? Am I doing daily devotions? It's the physical disciplines. Am I taking care of my body to the best of my ability, particularly as I get older and my metabolism slows down? You know, it's relationally with my wife, with our kids, with my daughter-in-law and friends and other people and so forth. Like all these different areas that I've got to get focused in on so that I'm not depleted. Because if I'm depleted, I've got nothing to give. I can barely survive. I'm tired or I'm overweight or I'm not, you know, locked in the way I need to be spiritually and I'm struggling with addiction or temptation or whatever. So I've got to start here. But secondly, God doesn't call us to walk this path alone. And as you talked about, Chris, men, I can absolutely relate to the fact that we have all of this burden of responsibility that's been thrust on our shoulders to be the breadwinner or to be a good leader for our families and to be the point man for all the things that life brings and to be that sheepdog, that guardian, right, to try to protect the ones that I care about and protect my community and all that. It is a heavy lift. And unfortunately, we men are less inclined to reach out for help because we struggle with the human dilemma of ego. We've got to try to show that we've got everything together. I often tell people, and men in particular, you know, we need men of courage. And one of the most courageous things that you can do is to simply ask for help.
Wow.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. But if we do that, then we have, you know, a brother in arms, or we have people around us that can help provide that support. When we see Jesus sending out the 70 plus disciples, it wasn't 71, it wasn't 73, it wasn't an odd number, 72. Mm-hmm. And they sent them out in pairs. That was very intentional because you need to have somebody that's got your back. Yeah. And so for men out there, I would simply say, first of all, hang in there. Don't quit. Mm-hmm. Keep battling. Whatever the journey is that you're on or the responsibilities are that you're shouldering. If you don't have people around you, if you don't have what I call a 3 a.m. friend, where when your life drops out and it's 3 in the morning, who do you call? Find a 3 a.m. friend, somebody that is with you, somebody that's not going to judge you and automatically condemn you for whatever it is, somebody who could be there to support you, and then meet regularly with him or a group. And continue to encourage each other. I just started a new thing here in Indianapolis called the Crane Leadership Community. And it's for senior leaders who are executive leaders, CEOs, pastors, whatever. And we've got a group of about 10 of us. And this one happens to be all male. So we met a few weeks ago and people all walked out. We only met for a couple hours. People all walked out of there like, oh my goodness, this was so helpful. Because you just have some people that are walking that journey the way you are. And so we've got to have that courage to ask for help, realize that that leadership is a team sport, and then just keep hiking. I've hiked about 1,000 miles of the Appalachian Trail. I've taken my boys out there. They've hiked hundreds of miles. And one of the things they heard me say often is the trail does not hike itself. Mm-hmm. You've got to put one foot in front of the other. And whether you got a mountain in front of you or a valley, you got to keep going.
John, I'm wondering, part of your brand, as you call it, are you the guy that comes in into a setting and you, through your presence and the things you say, you open up the door for people to kind of exhale and open up their hearts and minds to you?
That's my hope. That's my hope. I mean, when we were in the political world, obviously everybody's kind of walking on pins and needles and you don't want to, you know, get on the wrong side of the leadership because they you got bills you're trying to pass and all this stuff. And we had a few times where we had some hard conversations. I mean, we had to have some internal conversations that were really tough. And I remember one, I won't go into the details, but it was hugely significant. So we were all gathered in the room where we have those conversations, the caucus room. And I remember prior to that, before I went to the state house, I was out mowing our yard. We've got about 3 acres. I'm out there on my zero turn, like tooling along, thinking about all these different things and praying about what we were going to have to talk about. And I realized, man, this is going to be tough. And nobody's going to want to get honest because the senior leader's in the room. And the senior leader in this particular case had something to do with the problem we were having to deal with. Well, he and I have a very good relationship going back many years. And so I felt God tapping me on the brain going, you might be the one that has to take the lead. And so we got in there and I built enough goodwill with him that we could have a come to Jesus meeting. I was respectful, but I was as candid as I've ever been. Well, what that does is that gives everybody else permission to go, what John said, like, yeah. They don't have to actually say it. And so that's part of being that guardian leader where it's like, look, I'll take the hit. I don't mind, but that'll give you some cover and you can know that we've got your back. To your point, Chris, I think that's huge. One of the best things that a leader can do, especially in a small group setting, is go first. Mm-hmm. Be the first one to go. And then that gives people permission to go, oh, wow, okay. So we can kind of put some other stuff out there that we don't normally talk about in polite company. And it's going to be okay in this space. And so for guys in particular, this is one of the things I told this Crane Leadership Community group. I said, confidentiality is going to be huge here. We're not going to go out of here and start talking about stuff because that's super important. I got to know this is a safe place for me to get real. Because if we buy into the lie that I've got enough strength, I've got enough willpower, I've got enough brain cells to figure this out on my own, then we isolate and that becomes the devil's playground. And so I've walked down that path far too many times over many years and hopefully figured out a few things along the way. And one of those is to go, I got to loop some other people in my life so that we can lock arms together.
Isolation is actually an ugly, ugly thing. Yeah, it really is.
But very tempting, right?
Sure it is.
So it's a challenge.
With our work, we mentor lots of leaders and I hear them talk about the loneliness at the top, how lonely it is at the top. And so I appreciate exactly what you said. Yes, it can be lonely, but then there's that intentionality. Okay, so loop yourself, get with like-minded, start a community like John Crane did. You know,
just well, and you got to get people around you that know you and really care about you. Yeah. In politics, honestly, I can't remember if I shared this on our conversation a month ago with Kingdom Factor, but one of the things I came to discover very quickly, and somebody had warned me about it, which was helpful, is, of course, when you become a senator, you become very, quote unquote, popular with a lot of people. Okay. There's a lot of people that want some time. They want to rub shoulders with you, all these kinds of things. But 99% of the interactions are transactional because it's all about what can you do for me? That's why I want to spend time with you, because in the back of my mind, if not in the front of my mouth, is here's what you could do for me. And so that's just part of it. And I volunteered for it, right? So you deal with it. But on my hardest days as a senator, on my darkest moments when the clouds were kind of gathering, I remember having conversations with my wife and going, do I have any real friends anymore? Mm. Like, do I have anybody that actually cares about John Crane, not quote unquote Senator Crane?
Yeah.
And so I do, which I'm grateful for. I have a handful of 3 a.m. friends, right? I've got three brothers. So I have some of those folks that knew me when, which was really helpful because they can encourage you. They can also humble you at points where you might buy into the hype. But we've all got to have those people around us that can be that for us. And it's one of the greatest gifts that's the hardest to attain. Because in order for me to get there and enjoy the gift, I've got to be willing to get vulnerable. And in today's optics-focused, social media-saturated culture, nobody wants to get really real, right? We all just want to put our Facebook self out there, our Instagram self out there, which is just the highlight reel of whatever happened in the last week or the last month. Mm-hmm. And yet we all know, as we get older especially, that as you said, Chris, earlier, what happens in the day-to-day? Well, the day-to-day is much muddier and messier than all these wonderful leadership talking points that I can articulate well. And people go, as you said, wow, you must have it all figured out. Mm-hmm. I don't. I've got a few things figured out and I'm continually trying to learn. And you try to then continue to conform your day-to-day more in line with the ideal. And that's the challenge every day. Put one foot in front of the other, keep striving for the goal.
I was just going to say, as we wrap up, Chris, are there any thoughts, questions you want to address?
There are several we don't have time for, I realize.
We'll have to do a part two, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's your rally. I tell guys, and I'm going to start mentoring them. I tell them, look, I'm not going to talk about the weather with you. If you want to do that, there's anybody on the planet can do that pretty much. We're going to get real, but we're going to keep it confidential. And I can continue to find when a guy has a safe place, and it's the same thing for women, but with men, where he can be vulnerable, he can exhale, and he can feel valued and cared about by me being in front of him. And so we're going to talk about everything under the sun at some point. And so with our mentoring, you may have seen that. So we take the holistic approach. And that's something that was never done for me. So we're spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, relational, and professional or educational. And you mentioned those as well for yourself. They all impact one another. And so it is so important, it's so critical that we look at our lives and go, you know what? Life is difficult sometimes, but there's so many blessings, so many good things. Let me invite someone else in my life to help me with this. And John, I think you're probably a catalyst, someone who strikes the match, aren't you?
Well, I try to be. Okay. I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's just say, okay, God, use me. I've been blessed. I know that. It isn't as if life hasn't been hard, but I also know that I have been blessed to grow up in the family I grew up in, to grow up here in the United States, to have a variety of things that a lot of people don't have. And so, you know, it's trying to leverage all of that to serve people. And to your point, Chris, my goal is to try to strike as many matches as I can so that collectively we can continue to be the light that God's called us to be, whatever that looks like. Now, obviously, I don't use all this kind of Christian language and secular corporate settings all the time or certain political settings, but at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
It's trying
to help people find and follow the good path to the truly good life. And if we can strike a match to point the way, then that's exactly what we should be doing.
I'll say one more thing, Kristen, and then I'll be quiet. Okay. I really like what resonates with me so much of this, but realizing that we each have a brand, and it may be really a bad brand we're not even aware of. And with our listeners, I want them to think about, okay, I have a brand. It's good. It's okay. It's bad. I want it to be really good. Mm-hmm. What are people, not just what they're going to say, but what do they see? How are they influenced by me? Mm-hmm. And so I have an opportunity as a mentor to help a man. Let's look at your brand. You tell me what you think your brand is, and I want to tell you what I'm seeing and hearing. Mm-hmm. Let's really look at this, because you have the opportunity to influence people for good or bad. So I love that today, that we each have a brand. So I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, you bet. And that's really the thing, right? So we've made some decisions. I know with some people, I may have a less than positive brand. And some of it is simply circumstance, and some of it is bad choices I've made or things that I did a year ago or years ago that they've always remembered, you know, or whatever. So one of the things that I try to help people understand is if you haven't built the best brand, it's never too late. And never. One of the best things that you can do is simply incorporate within yourself and verbalize on a regular basis a simple question, which is, how can I help you? If you start asking that and you consistently ask that and people start taking you seriously and you start adding value, you will quickly redeem that brand regardless of what it was before.
Mm. John, one of the tools we have is we ask someone, I want you to look at these six areas, the spiritual, physical, and so on. Mm-hmm. I want you to choose one and tell me how you would rate yourself. Then we ask, why would you rate yourself there? All right. So what do you think needs to happen in order for you to rate yourself higher in that down the road? And because those things actually build brand.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
And then we say, what's one thing, not what's the whole strategy?
Yeah,
what's one
exactly.
thing do after this meeting? Yeah.
Yeah. I used to be that guy too. Like, I need to do this and I need to do that and I need to do this. And it becomes this avalanche of discouragement. And so then I read Atomic Habits by James Clear, and that helped me simplify things. Like, if you can just get 1% better, it's like, okay, I think I could do that.
Okay. So tell the listener, if they want to know more about you and about your leadership development strategy organization, give us all your your contact info.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. Love this conversation. This is awesome. We'll have to do it again. If people want to reach out to me, the best way to do that is to look me up on our website, which is craneleadership.org, C-R-A-N-E, leadership.org. And that's our platform for where we do all kinds of things. I'm somebody that, as I said earlier, I travel and speak. And so my radius for travel is as big as it needs to be. Mm. So if you got listeners that would like to have me come and speak or do a training or anything like that, I'd be happy to do that. As you mentioned, Chris, we do some coaching and consulting. All the things that we do are in kind of three sectors. One is the business professional space, one is the political government space, and then one is the nonprofit church space, which is kind of a combination of my life journey. And so if you have leaders in those spaces, they can come find us at craneleadership.org. Again, if people want me to come and speak, there's a speaking request form that they can fill out. It's very simple. And if they want to get a hold of me directly, my email address is John, J-O-H-N, at craneleadership.org. Feel free to send an email, and I'd love to follow up with folks if they're interested in having me come and help.
Well, while we've been recording this, I've got in touch with some people in Oklahoma City, and they want to have you come speak to a leadership group and give you an NBA t-shirt that we won the Pacers.
I would be willing to suffer through that just to come out to OKC. I love Oklahoma.
John, we just thank you so much for your time. And just, it's great to see the way we go. Oh, yeah, that ticks our boxes. Those are our DNA as well. So we really thank you. And listener, we'll give you the transcript and information. We do want to tell you that today is brought to you by Shelter Insurance, the Aaron Reese Agency. His agency offers auto, home, life, business insurance, and they strive to build, get ready for it, real life relationships with all of their customers. To contact them, it's A-R-U-I-Z at shelterinsurance.com. Give them a shout. Thank you so much for listening today to Real Life Mentoring Podcast.